This is episode 89 of The Variety Artist. This is John Abrams, your host, and that guy that interviews successful variety artists from around the world. I recently put on my website every single book that every single guest on this show has recommended. Just go to thevarietyartist.com/books. You'll find them there. And special thanks to David Aiken, the checkerboard guy, for the great idea. To celebrate, I figured I'd let you listen to one of the top authors in our biz. He's Christopher T. Magician. He's written four of the most respected books in the industry. In this show, Christopher reveals his own thoughts on his newest book, Be More Funny. If you want a behind-the-scenes look at how an author goes about writing what he knows and how to actually get it done, then this is the show for you. So after the show, make sure to go to thevarietyartist.com/books to get any book recommended by any guest on any of my shows. Oh, yeah, I also listed Christopher's books there, just in case. Have fun.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
My guest today knows funny. In fact, he even wrote the book on it. Hot off the presses, his newest book, Be More Funny, is getting rave reviews from magicians and entertainers everywhere. He's the author of Beyond Look, Don't See, and Just for Fun, and one of the most popular and innovative magicians in Southern California. Variety artists, I give you Christopher T. Magician.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing, Chris?
I'm pretty good.
Oh, good. Well, let's get right into it then. Let's start with the elephant in the room, Christopher T. Magician T for Taco. How did you come up with that?
It just sometimes, I guess, fate steps in and makes life awesome. So basically, this was back in the day. I got a new 888 number. I wanted a toll-free number, and I wanted it to spell a word. I wanted it to be something where I just say 888 blank and go and spell it. And there was a program at the time, you could type in any phone number and it would tell you what words it spelled. Mm-hmm. And so I just kept some service where I was trying to get an 888 number, and they would send you all the possible numbers, and I typed them in, and all of a sudden Taco popped up.
Huh.
And at the time, I started as Christopher the Magician, but I Googled one day Christopher the Magician and realized there's a good amount of Christopher the Magicians. It's a pretty common, surprisingly, name.
And there's a lot of the Magicians, right?
Yeah, that alone, yeah. And honestly, if there's just one Christopher the Magician other than me, that's too many. I don't want more than that. If you know Christopher Weed at all, he makes the Showtime Tables. I'm pretty sure he's the reason why I switched my name from Christopher the Magician, because he basically took up the first page on Google of the Christopher the Magicians out there. So I guess thank you to him for that, Taco. So it was Christopher T. Magician, which the T stood for the. But there I was coming up with a phone number, and Taco popped up. And I was like, what if the T just stood for Taco? And I love that kind of humor, just weird out there stuff. And so there was Taco. And then, so that was the last four digits. And I still had the first three, and I just kept typing those in. And all of a sudden, Yay popped up, 929. Yay. And so I was like, all right, maybe my middle name's Taco and my magic words are Yay Taco. And then that literally, it was all happenstance. But honestly, I think it's probably the best unintentional marketing thing I've ever done in my life, because people just will always remember, oh, it's the taco guy. Oh, they just remember it.
It's terrific branding for you, right?
Yeah, and completely accidental. But I mean, the thing that wasn't accidental is just the weird sense of humor about it, the weird silliness of it. That I loved, but I never in a million years thought, oh, it's probably the best branding marketing thing I ever came up with. But
it's wonderful. In fact, I saw you at a showcase, I don't know, what, 3-4 months ago, a library showcase, and you had made all sorts of little tacos for all the librarians.
It's just been really, it's really cool. And my license plate right now is Yay Taco. Like I just really embraced the tacos. It's
you got the license plate Yay Taco?
Yeah, I got it. I sometimes regret it when I like cut somebody off in traffic or something. But it's, the awesome thing about it is, and again, it's not intentional. I would, you know, I'm just this big, stupid, grown-up kid who was like, I can get Yay Taco on my license plate. Yeah. But like, people will just walk by when I'm at a stopped at a crosswalk, and they'll walk by and just wave at me. And I'm like, what did I do? And they point at it, and they like give me a thumbs up. Or I'll hear people when I'm parked at a parking lot just shout, Yay Taco. And then I'm like, did they see my show? And I realize, oh, wait, that was my. But it's kind of neat without. People are angry nowadays, and it's kind of neat to just have this thing that makes people randomly laugh every once in a while. Yeah.
All right, Chris, let's talk about your brand new book.
Yes.
Be More Funny. So I want to talk about the different chapters, the character and concept, situation, comedy, all those different things. And the great thing about your book is not only do you talk about these different concepts, but you put them into practical magic tricks. So that way we can use these concepts and actually put them into our show and use them.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of the goal. My goal is... And it was the same with my first book, which was Beyond Look, Don't See, except that was geared. And basically, this is the exact same book I wrote for kid show magicians, but now for adult comedy magicians. Okay. And the concept is just, I almost call it the dummy guide to creating comedy magic. And this is not like the only way to create comedy magic, but this is for, I think anybody who's been doing comedy magic forever, a working pro, would still find interesting information and great routines and stuff in this. But really, to me, this book is for the person out there who all they have ever done is buy other people's routines, buy the tricks, do them exactly like other people do them, and they never once thought for a second, maybe I can make my own routine. Maybe I can come up with my own unique routine that's purely me and purely mine and that I can be proud of. And that's sort of where I come from when I write this book. I want it to feel like anybody feels like they have an end to creating comedy. Now that with their magic, that was my goal.
Yeah, and they can separate themselves from other magicians by creating their own unique character and storyline and routines, right?
Yeah, exactly. The tools are out there, and the tools are hidden in other people's brilliant comedy routines. And this was my way of doing it. You see that brilliant comedy routine, and hopefully it's one you bought in a book or a DVD, but you know, some people, you'll even see something on YouTube and you're like, oh, that's so funny. And you go buy the trick, even though you didn't get the rights to it. But you know, you see that funny routine, you buy the trick, and you do it exactly like that. But really at the heart of that routine is the tool to make people laugh, because it's not that trick that's making people laugh. So once you pinpoint what that tool is, and you've pinpointed your character, you've pinpointed all of your what your voice is. Once you have that tool and your voice, you could take it and apply it to any trick at all. And now it's the same tool. It's the same thing making people laugh, but it's a new trick. And that automatically, it makes it yours. It makes it different from anybody else's.
Yeah, well, let's talk about one of these first tools. Let's give them a little bit of a taste of your book. Let's talk about character. So how do you about creating a new character?
First of all, comedy aside, I think figuring out what your character is, number one, the most important thing you could do for your magic. Whether you're a comedy magician, serious magician, kid show, it doesn't matter. Whatever your character is, that's going to influence everything you do in your magic. And for me, I was lucky because I was in a phase where I was trying to figure out, what is my character going to be on stage? What is my character? And my mother called me and she said, your nephew, he was like 5 at the time, he said the funniest thing. He said, why does Christopher get to live up, Uncle Christopher, why does he get to live up in New York City all by himself? And she said, well, because he's an adult, he can do whatever he wants. And my nephew said, no, he's a big kid. Basically, when she told me that story, it immediately popped into my head, I'm just a big kid.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the starting point to everything I've done since. Now I would change it a little bit. I wouldn't say I'm a big kid, I'm a grown-up kid. I'm a grown-up who doesn't know how to be a proper adult, which is true in real life and not in real life. The rule has always been that your character on stage is just the bigger version of yourself. Mm-hmm. But I think that gets misinterpreted, because I will see people on stage being just as boring as they are in real life, yeah. Or just being a little louder. Like, oh, I'm talking louder. That makes me a bigger version of myself. But really, what a bigger version of yourself means is, what are you? Like, objectively speaking, look at the clues of your life and ask what you are. Now, when my nephew said that, I'm a big kid, but the clues were there. Like, I don't pay my bills on time, even when I have the money, because I'm not good at being an adult. Mm-hmm. I got pulled over by a cop, and he was like, your registration's up. Why didn't you fix it when you got the thing in the mail saying you need to do your registration? And I literally said to the cop, I'm not very good at being an adult. And he laughed and luckily gave me a warning. But, like, the clues were there. I have a closet literally full of hobbies that I had to take on. The weirdest one, I wanted to do domino toppling. I spent hundreds of dollars on dominoes so I could set them up and knock them down. Like, I spent a month doing that, and now they're in the closet because that's what a kid would do. I get obsessed with something. I buy a bunch of crap. I throw it in the closet.
Yeah.
So, like, the clues are there. I should have known. And that's the key, is to what is your life, you know? If you're a shy, introverted person, that doesn't mean go on stage and be loud and outgoing. It means you can enhance that on stage. You could be an interesting, shy, introverted person on stage. If you like punk rock music, you know, that's going to influence what you are on stage. Are you a Democrat and liberal? Are you a conservative Republican? Those different things are going to affect what you are on stage. And the key to, like, the answer to the bigger version of yourself means, once you've determined what you are, that's going to influence everything about you, what you wear, what your performing name is, how you speak to an audience, and then, like, everything down to the jokes you're going to tell, the tricks you're going to do. If you're a shy, introverted person, that's going to affect the type of people you. If you're a tight, uptight, clean freak,
yeah,
you're not going to do a snowstorm necessarily, or a silk to egg, because that's going to crack an egg. That it will influence the tricks you choose to do, or you might do those tricks, but it's going to influence how you do those tricks.
Sure.
So every single decision you make is based on what you are as a person, and that's how you get that bigger version of yourself on stage. It's highlighting those things.
So creating your character makes life a lot easier when you're creating a show.
Oh, I think so. But you know what else it does? My favorite thing about creativity is when you put yourself into a box, when you give yourself limitations, your best, most creative ideas are going to come out of it. Like, if I said, I want you to make a show right now, here's $1 billion, do whatever you want, I don't think that show is going to be as strong and impressive as if I said, I want you to do an entire stage show, here's $100, that's mm-hmm. all you get. You're going to, the creativity that's going to come out of that it's like forced upon you. And by putting those chains around you, it just makes you think out of the box in ways that you never would if you just have unlimited resources. And the same is true with your character. Like, my character, when I perform for adults, I have this general rule that, first of all, everything I do is kind of weird and zany.
Yep.
Because I'm essentially a big kid. And when I perform for adults, my whole concept is it's a kid's TV show for adults. That's like the idea. It's like Sesame Street, but a little dirtier, a little raunchier, a little wilder.
Okay.
But so everything I do, it has a weird, silly, strange quality about it. But also, I love to just leave a giant mess on the stage. So if I do a card trick, I'm throwing cards everywhere. I do a trick with cheese and there's cheese slices everywhere. I do a lemon trick and there ends up my Bill and Lemon ends up with like 50 lemons cut up all over the stage. By the time my show's over, what does it look like? It looks like a kid who's just been playing in their room with their toys for an hour. It's a giant mess, and that's the way it should look because I'm a big kid. You know, it influences everything. That's the point.
Your character influences the entire show. When I first started doing this, I did and still do. You've seen my show. I've done something called Animal Magic, which is magic with live animals.
Yeah.
So when I first started putting it together, I was struggling with my character and I was struggling with the show and trying to figure out what is what. And then I had the idea of crossing. Remember Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter?
Yeah.
Whenever I talk about an animal, basically I'm kind of channeling Steve Irwin, the crocodile. And I am, of course, American. He's Australian, so it makes it really easy. And early Howie Mandel. Did you ever see any?
He would blow up the, I would call it a balloon on his head. Yeah.
It was actually a surgical glove.
Yeah, kind of like Oh, that's right. It was a surgical. Here, I was thinking it was a prophylactic. Anyway, I'm confused in my memories. But that's actually a really good example. That's what that is.
By crossing those two,
of what you are, yeah.
Yeah, it created this character, and it was so much easier to put the show together because of it.
But that actually is another way that I use to, I talk about it in the book. It's one of my favorite techniques for creating comedy, but also a really great technique for coming up with your character, and that it's called mapping. And it's a sketch comedy, like, Saturday Night Live, Kids in the Hall, like those Monty Python sketch comedy. It's a technique where you just take two ideas that don't necessarily belong together, and you put them together, and you're likely to come up with something kind of funny, kind of interesting.
Yep.
I don't know. Well, I mean, actually, like what you said, Steve Irwin as a magician, that's mapping in essence, one of my, I would love to do this. This is a character maybe someday I'll just try. But what's his name from the Big Bang Theory? Sheldon from the Big Bang Theory.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine that as a magician. Put that together. That would be an amazing character to watch.
Somebody listening to this is going to do that.
I mean, they should. Can you imagine? Like, this is what he'd do. He would do an amazing trick. The audience would clap, and he'd be like, you're really stupid for clapping at that because it's obvious that this is, he would just be a real jerk doing it. It would be really interesting. But this idea of taking one idea, putting it together with another is a really cool way of coming up with some really neat ideas.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's go on to the concept. What's the difference between like creating a character and creating actually the concept?
Yeah, sometimes they're one and the same. But like, for example, your concept, and I think the concept of any performer needs to just be easily explained. And it needs to be kind of anything other than what you are. Meaning, if I said, why should I come to your magic show? And the answer is, well, I'm a magician. If that's your concept, I'm a magician, then I don't think you're interesting enough, because I can see any magician. Right. You, John Abrams, are a an animal magician. Buster Balloon, he is the balloon magician. I have my concept for adults is I'm the kids' magic show for adults. I liken it to, and it goes back to my previous passions in life of writing musical theater. Like, I think the way to get a show on Broadway is to have, you've got to be able to define it in a second. Wicked is the Wizard of Oz from the Wicked Witch's point of view. Hamilton is our founding fathers told through hip hop. Like, I can easily explain what they do, what they are.
It's like almost like a quick elevator pitch.
Yeah. I mean, I think you should be able to say imagine if a parent calls you, what do you do? I'm actually thinking of changing it or retooling what I tell parents for kids, because I've been getting this compliment a lot, and I think I think I'm going to tell parents from now on basically I will make your kids laugh harder than anything else. I don't know. That's I will make it sound better than that. But like, your kids will never laugh louder and harder than when I perform in
front. Sure.
So they can connect. Your character and your concept can connect. I think your character matches your concept a lot. You seem like the outgoing, happy, goofy zookeeper, and here are your animals. But you could be, I mean, not necessarily for kids, but you could be the angry goth teenager who's doing magic with animals. Like, they don't have to connect necessarily. Sometimes if they don't connect in an interesting way, it's that juxtaposition of them not making sense together that can actually create a lot of comedy. But basically, your character is who you are and who you present yourself on stage as. Your concept is just like, what is it about your show that makes it different? What is it about your show that makes it interesting? And the two, again, they can connect, or you could be the guy doing classical, beautiful magic to music, but the music you choose is hip-hop music, hip-hop rap music. So those things don't necessarily connect, but it's your concept and your character battling each other.
Or like a funeral director with hip-hop music.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Perfect. I love it.
Let's talk about situation comedy then. Well, tell me about your ideas for a situation, not a situation comedy, but situation comedy as you explain it.
Well, so here's the thing. I think if somebody gets a trick a magic trick, and they want to make it funny. I think 99 point of everybody, what do you think when you get a brand new magic trick? And this was me many years ago. The thing you get the trick, and the first thing you ask is, what am I going to say to make this funny? What am I going to say to make this interesting? What am I going to say to make this entertaining for the audience? What are some jokes I can find? Maybe I can find somebody else who's doing this routine and take some of their jokes. You know, that's kind of, we're concerned about what we're saying. That makes sense, because that's, you know, it's kind of terrifying, the idea. You got to be on stage with this thing. You got to say something.
Yeah.
But I think that's actually the least of our worries. Starting out, I think the most important thing when you face a new magic trick is, what am I going to do with this trick?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I focus on that is because, and I'll use examples from magic in a second, but look at sitcoms. Sitcoms on TV, comedy shows, they're called sitcoms because they are situation comedy. And yes, there are funny lines, there's funny dialogue, but at the heart of it, what is there? A situation.
Right.
So when you have the scene with the guy who, I'm making this up, but the guy who he makes the date with this girl, but he made the date with the other girl at the same restaurant at the same time.
Oh no.
Yeah. So he goes to that side of the restaurant. And he says something to this girl. Ooh, he checks his, oh, I got to go make a phone call to my mother. And then he runs to the other girl. And in the process, there aren't going to be funny lines, but the real big laughs, the comedy comes from this situation where this guy has to run back and make up lies to each person. That's where the comedy comes from.
That's great.
Here's where I think, in terms of magicians, here's where I think the, like, hopefully the light bulb goes off. And that is, think about the absolute most famous classic comedy magic routines that have existed, that people do again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say the vanishing bandana, even though I despise it with a passion.
You and me both.
Yeah. If you're by number one rule of comedy magic, everybody, if you're doing the vanishing bandana, burn it. Do not ever do it again.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I don't mind if you do it because you bought it, but I will sit through any magic show. But the moment that comes out, I'll leave, because I know for a fact you're not going to do it. You know, if you pull out the linking rings, I might roll my eyes and be annoyed that I'm going to have to sit through the linking rings for 10 minutes. But you might surprise me. You might do something interesting in that routine that I haven't seen. But I know you're not going to do that with a vanishing bandana, because right, it's a recording. Like, you're not going to surprise me with something. So don't do the vanishing bandana. Right. Anyway. Oh my gosh. But I'm going to use that as an example. Like, everybody has heard of the vanishing bandana, but yes, when you think about it, there's no funny lines in that trick. When I say funny lines, I mean jokes. And, but like in the recording, it's one of the lines that's just, fold the bandana in half.
Right.
That's not funny. But the reason, theoretically, it's funny, maybe if you've never seen it before, which, let's be honest, it's, oh my God. Anyway, but if you know, why is it funny? It's because you have a banana.
Right.
It says fold the bandana in half, and so you fold the banana in. That's why it's funny. It's not the line, fold the bandana in half. It's the situation around that line.
Yes.
If you look at paper balls over the head, Sly Gamey, classic, beautiful. One of the, you'll probably never get as big of laughs necessarily as you do with that routine. There's no funny lines in that. It's just the situation. The audience is in on the joke. The person on stage has no clue what's going on. That's the comedy. It's not about a funny line. The comedy egg can, where you accidentally, you know, you tip the can over on somebody's head while you're reading the instructions.
Mm-hmm.
And then you pull the instruction cards out. And what's the next step? Do not remove the instruction card.
Of course.
Again, yeah, that's not a funny line. But it's the situation. It's the fact that do not remove the instruction card, and you realize, oh crap, I just did that, and now I have egg on this person's head. That's the situation. And that the bottom line is, a funny situation, a funny premise, a funny concept with your trick is going to result in bigger laughs than just doing a normal old trick with some jokes.
You add that to your character, and you're styling.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not to say you can't do jokes. That is absolute. You should absolutely do funny lines. But if somebody's doing a trick, I'm just going to say the egg bag. Somebody's doing the egg bag, and they're just doing the egg bag with some funny jokes. Okay, great. But if you take the egg bag and say, how can I make the trick itself funny? How can I make the concept, the situation around this trick funny? You are at a starting point that's way ahead of anybody else, because now you have a trick that's funny that now you can add comedy lines to. So it's just adding funny on top of fun. And that's the goal, just as much funny as possible. More funny!
It's more funny! Well, one of the things that I love in your book is your tropes. You know, I got to be honest with you. I may sound like a dummy, but I didn't know what the word trope meant until about a year ago.
Yeah, I didn't until I discovered that website that I mentioned in the book, which I could talk about real fast. But I'll tell people what it is right now. I was like, a trope!
Yes. Christopher, what is a trope?
A trope is basically a cliche, but a trope is anything. You watch TV, you watch movies, you watch commercials. A trope is anything that gets used again and again and again. You've seen it a million times. It is essentially a cliche.
Yep.
And it happens whether it's comedy or not. Like, the old cop dramas, horror movies. If there's a cop, it's probably going to be like 2 days away from retirement. You know, like just 2 more days and then they're probably going to die or something. You know, like it happens all the time. But that it exists in comedy too. I'm trying to think of an example now off the top of my head. Well, okay, the classic whoopee cushion. Mm-hmm. And slipping on a banana peel. These are like old school classics. But yeah, you've seen them in a million Bugs Bunny cartoons, all sorts of TV shows. And they happen again and again. And there's a couple things you can kind of get out of that. Number one, they happen again and again because they work.
Yep.
That's it. They wouldn't necessarily keep using these things if they did. Actually, the thing I just quote unquote made up with the guy who made the date with the two women and there's one on this side, that's right, happened a billion times in movies. You know, it was in Miss Doubtfire. That right off the top of my head, it was in that movie.
I just saw it on a Disney sitcom just the other day.
Yeah, there you go, perfect. But so these things happen again and again because they work. And so we can take those. Oh, and by the way, I'll just tell you, one of my favorite resources for coming up with ideas for comedy magic is, I'm going to tell you what to Google, because if you go on Google and type in comedy tropes, and tropes is T-R-O-P-E-S, tropes, comedy tropes, the first thing that Google pops up will be, it's called tvtropes.com/blah, blah, 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 blah. tvtropes.com has like tropes from, like I said, the cop that's going to retire in 2 days. That's on the TV Tropes website. But if you look up comedy tropes, you'll get tvtropes.com/blah, blah, 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 blah. And that's going to take you directly to the specifically comedy tropes. And it is a list of almost every trope. I mean, you'll start reading and be like, oh my God, that. Like two people or two objects or a glue mishap. So I can think already on The Simpsons, Bart Simpson, you super glue to put a fake nose and fake novelty items on his face and got stuck on his face. Homer Simpson put super glue in a bucket and got it stuck on his head. Brian and Stewie and Family Guy got themselves stuck together with super glue. So Muppet, The Muppet Show, they super glue got all over the set and everybody was getting stuck to everything. Like the idea of glue causing this giant mishap.
Yeah.
Is a trope that you've seen a million times.
I did a play where a guy glues a cup to his hand.
Oh, there you go. That actually sounds pretty funny. I like that. The cool thing about this is what I already talked about, which is mapping. And mapping is the idea you take two ideas that don't necessarily go together and you put them together. Well, yes, tropes are cliches. They've happened a million times in movies and TVs, TV sitcoms and, you know, all sorts of things. But a lot of them have never happened in magic. Mm-hmm. So if you take the idea of the glue mishap and you take magic and you put them together, you're kind of mapping these two ideas that have never been put together, and it kind of help you come up with ideas. So maybe you could do a glue mishap with your cut restored rope. You can do a glue mishap with a card trick. You can this is not a trick that I've done in the book, an idea that I played with, but you could get some really strong kind of like double stick tape and put it on the back of an entire deck of cards and just spread them all backstage. And you accidentally cover yourself, quote unquote, with glue. And in the process, you fall backstage and the entire deck of cards gets stuck to your body as you're trying to find a card. And now you know, so there's your glue mishap. The idea was you're going to put glue on your hand and reach inside the box where the cards are. You pull it out and one card stuck to your hand, but you end up getting every single card stuck to your body and the chaos that ensues. So like there's a card trick with the glue mishap. So you could take these tropes and they can inspire so many ideas. All right. That's my blabbing on comedy tropes.
Well, there are a lot of magic tropes because when I see somebody pull out a rope, I know what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. And we can really, I mean, once you start noticing the magic tropes, you can really play with those. I mean, this is a prop that exists already, but the you know, you pull out a hat, you reach inside, you start to pull something out. What is it going to be? It's going to be a rabbit. And there's that little rubber thing. It's the rabbit.
Rabbit.
It's like the little.
I use it in one of my shows.
Yeah. So you reach in your hat, everybody knows what's coming out, and then it's that terrifying looking rabbit thing. And like, that kind of surprise what the audience expects versus what happens will automatically kind of get a laugh because it's a surprise is one of the easiest ways to get a laugh.
Yep. Let's get into the technical thing. Now these are kind of selfish questions for my own self. Once you've written your book, how do you actually get it made?
Oh, that's fun. I've never really talked about this stuff. Oh, cool. Well, so my first book I did on CreateSpace, which is basically the printing company of Amazon. And the cool thing about it, when I got the first copy of my first book, the little proof copy, I got it in the mail and I opened it up and I looked at it and I held it in my hands and I was like, well, crap, that's a book. Like, it's an actual book.
So you just sent the PDF to Amazon and they sent you back a book?
No, so, okay, it's createspace.com. There are other ones, lulu.com, there are a few others. CreateSpace is just the one I've always used. But you go on there and you it probably takes 10 minutes to set up, but you put in your name, you set up an account.
Sure.
It doesn't cost anything. You just go in there and fill out all the stuff. But then what you do is you go through the process. It's basically an uploading process. And if you were doing it for the first time, it would be, it's going to be trial and error and it'll take a week to get it all done probably. But, now I could do it in, no time at all. But basically what you do through the CreateSpace website, it's a whole uploading process. So basically you enter in the first thing is the title of the book, the author's name, all of that stuff on the first page. And then next is the kind of uploading page. And that's where you choose the size of the book. You can basically choose any size from 8.5 inches wide to 11 inches high. So a standard American sheet of paper size, or lower. So if you want an 8.5 inch book by 8.5 inch height, you could do that. You could do 6x9, any size, as long as it doesn't go over 11 inches high or go wider than 8.5 inches wide.
And then does it convert what you've written into that size?
No. So you can, download through the website. You could download the layout. I can't think of words. This is why I write, because the words don't come when I'm talking. You could download the layout and it uploads it into Microsoft Word, and then it kind of does the structure for you. But what I do is I just go on. You go to Microsoft Word. I do everything on Microsoft Word.
Okay.
And you just go to page layout at the top, and it'll say size, and you just do it there. 6 inches wide, 9 inches. You just go through all the prompts there, and you set it up there. So if you want a 9-inch by 7-inch book, you just go and type in 9 inches by 7 inches.
Got it. And then you can format it how you want it to look.
Yeah, anything you want within the 6-inch by, within that size book, yes.
So you upload it to CreateSpace, and then they send you back, or you format it through CreateSpace. You format it yourself, send it to
Put it in there. And then once it's there, you have, it's just like the automatic proof checker thing. So it uploads it, and then you can look at the file through there to make sure everything looks good. Which is especially like if you're doing pictures or photos or anything like that, you got to go through and make sure they all look right, because sometimes in the uploading process, it won't match up. But they'll also have page 83, this is out of the margins, or page this, and you go back and fit. And that's why it's a lot of trial and error, at least the first time you do it, because you got to fix a lot of things. But there's also certain things, if it's not a red X, if it looks good on that, on the thing you're looking at on CreateSpace, the little preview thing, I would, don't worry about it, because it always prints fine. It's the ones that are the red X's that they force you to fix. So if it's not a red X, if it's like a little exclamation point.
So you go to your post office box and you get the book, the first book. How did that feel?
Oh my God, it was just, it's insane, because it's not like a little, it's not stapled. It's a real book, you know, it's a properly bound actual book. And the cool thing about it, I mean, you also have to design a cover, that's a whole lot, but you do it all through the
sure.
space. But it's really cool. I don't know how to describe it, but it's just an amazing feeling to sit there and be like, this is a real book. And I make a lot of, this is the thing I figured out along afterwards, but you can make your own magic coloring books. You can make your own flip force book. Like in my library show right now, I do a trick with Flat Stanley, and he disappears from somewhere. He's going to appear around the world somewhere. I made a book. It looks like a real photography photo book. Every page is different places from around the world, supposedly, that this photographer I made up took pictures of. And then if you flip the other way, it's like a Svengali deck. It forces the Eiffel Tower. So, I mean, and it looks like a real book. It doesn't look like you bought or made something with poster board or, you know, it looks like it really could be a photography journal book. So
when you get that first book, you get one, right? And now you're thinking about, well, I'm going to sell more than one. I'm going to sell 100, 1,000, however many you decide. What's the next step?
Well, so the reason I use CreateSpace, and let's be honest, if I bought 1,000 books all at once, not through CreateSpace, any other publication place, if I bought 1,000 books, I would get the books cheaper. Like, I could probably get this book for a couple bucks. But I don't do it 1,000 at a time. The cool thing about CreateSpace is I can buy one. If I have somebody contact me, they want to buy the book, they can PayPal me money, and I will ship them one book. And it doesn't cost me, you know, it costs more than if I bought 2,000. But I go through Murphy's Magic, which sends it to other magic places, magic dealers. And they'll order like 50 or 75 or 100 books. And I just type the address, click, and it's gone. I don't have to deal with it, which is awesome.
Oh, that's perfect. And that's how you go about basically self-publishing.
It's just so, it's really nice, because this is why I don't sell like products or things like that other than the books, because I can click a button and it ships. I don't have to go to the post office. I don't have to, I could pretty much offer free or reduced shipping to the US, but also around the world, because I guess because it's through CreateSpace, which is part of Amazon, the shipping is insanely cheap. So I just click a button, it goes, and I'm done. It's really awesome.
That is pretty awesome. Let's move on to the Variety Artist's favorite game.
Is it fat? Or is it something John just made up?
I'm going to give you a headline, and you're going to tell me whether it's fact, something that maybe happened to you or you did, or it's something that I just made up. And maybe you can tell me a little more about it if it's true.
I'm excited to hear what you made up.
Let's do it. First headline is, Chris falls asleep most nights watching old reruns on YouTube.
Yes, that is true.
That is true. What reruns?
But yeah, that's the weird part. It is, oh my gosh, it's like my own personal Ambien. I love old episodes of Bob Ross, the PBS painter. It's just so peaceful. I can't, it just knocks me out. One episode will usually last me 3 nights, because about 10 minutes in, I'm like, okay, that's good. I'm done. Just fine. That's not a knock to. I love him, but what's awesome about it is I know he's gonna paint a painting. I'm painting a mountain, and I know exactly how he's doing it. So it's still new. I'm still watching a new episode, so I'm still interested. But I know exactly what he's about to do, so I think it's just like this nice zoning now. I know if he paints a tree, I know there's going to be another tree next to it in about 5 seconds, because trees gotta have friends. You gotta have friends for your tree. I know he's gonna clean his brush and beat it against his stand and yell and say, you know, you got to beat the devil out of it. Like, it's comfort food. And I really think everybody should watch it because it just makes you happy. It makes you relaxed.
It's Bob Ross.
It's Bob Ross. And I cannot tell you, now that I'm driving all over California, there's mountains always in the distance. And every time I look at them, I think, I could paint that. All the time, I'm constantly like, I could paint that sky.
Actually, what we didn't tell you here in Southern California is they're really just giant Bob Ross paintings.
That's why they look so cool.
Not really the horizon. All right, next one. Right. Here we go. Chris's scooter died a half block from the party house. The party kids and parents alike had already gathered around and watched as Chris picked up the scooter and did what Chris now calls the walk of shame.
I'm going to say half true. You made that one up, but it's actually kind of true. Actually, I lied. So here's the thing. If people don't know, for my birthday party magic show, I zoom up on a scooter. So I park around the corner, and then I zoom up on a scooter, and the show starts immediately. And I'd say 70% of the time, the parents gather the kids to come outside and watch me zoom up. And the other 30%, the parents just don't necessarily get it. I don't know. So I zoom up, and nobody's out there. I'm like, all right. And then I go in, and the show starts. But I actually forgot my scooter one time. And it happened to be one of the I feel so bad. It happened to be one of the times the parents not only had the kids out front, but like gathered the kids and they're like, we got the kids out here. And I feel really bad. I lied. I mean, I literally lied because I was like, the kids are ready. Okay. And I'm texting. Okay. And I go open the back door of my car and they're like, there is no scooter back here.
Oh, no.
So I feel terrible for lying, but I just said, I just stepped on my scooter and the wheel broke off. I just lied. Oh. I feel terrible. I lied. But I didn't want to just be like, hey, I didn't break the scooter. She still loved the show. I mean, it was still the same kind of idea. I just walked up with my little show on my back and it was still this weird, wacky guy coming out of nowhere, but just no scooter.
I'm sure it was great.
It was a fine show, but oh boy, I felt terrible for lying.
Oh man. All right, next line. Here we go.
All right.
Chris refuses to eat fettuccine and linguine.
Yeah, that's true.
Why is that?
Because there's, oh God, it looks like tapeworms.
Oh.
Actually, all innuendo aside, kind of, I don't like big noodles. I don't like, I won't eat lasagna.
Oh, is that right?
I won't eat, squares and stuff's inside of them. What's that called?
Oh, like raviolis?
Ravioli. I won't eat ravioli. The little big slimy noodle. Ugh, God, there's some. But especially fettuccine and like linguine, that kind of like long tapeworm. Like, they look like tapeworms.
Because they look like tapeworms.
It's so gross.
It's like the thing nightmares have made of.
Really, basically, it is angel hair, regular spaghetti, or maybe like little ziti's. But that's pretty much it.
All right, here's the next one. You ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. Chris woke up at 2 a.m. with a rat cuddling up next to him in bed.
That is, I'm very sad to say, not true. I wish.
Oh, okay.
I wish that would happen, but no. My dog will cuddle up next to me. She is not a fan of the rats. So they are not allowed to be on the bed with her. She's made that very clear. So
I was sleeping one time and 2 a.m. All of a sudden, I feel something slithering onto my belly. And as you know, I'm the animal magician. And I used to keep a number of my animals in my office, which is in the front of my house.
Yeah.
So what happened is the snake,
oh my God,
ball python that I have, got out of his cage and sniffed me out all the way across the house.
Wow.
And at 2 a.m, I woke up and I'm thinking to myself, I hope that's my snake.
That would be strange. Wait, so he, did he want to be near you? Like
yeah.
Are they like affectionate?
Yeah, well, snakes, what they do is they look for the heat, and because he could probably smell me across, not that I smell bad, but I don't know.
Whoa. One way or the other. That's cool. I mean.
Yeah, so at 2 in the morning, I was like, oh my goodness.
So, I mean, when you have I love snakes. I think they're really cool. I mean, I guess you were, like, are you scared when there's a snake crawling on you in the middle of the night, or are you like, oh. No.
Well,
it's a snake. Okay.
At first, I wasn't quite sure, and then as soon as I looked down, I knew it was mine.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good at least.
All right, we're going to change it up a little bit. Right. Now, this one, I'm going to give you three headlines, and you tell me if they're true or not. I'm going to give you them all at once. All right. Okay. Ready? Okay. So, which one of these strange ailments has Chris faced? Are you ready?
All right. Okay. Cool. All right.
I'm going to give you a few of them. Having his foot sliced open by the spokes of a moving bicycle. Don't tell me.
I.
Number two, having a cyst removed from his belly button caused by an infected piece of 28-year-old umbilical cord. Or having 17 stitches all over his face from a single bite from a Rottweiler with a bad back.
The true one is... all of the above, actually. Oh. Yeah, all. Ryan makes fun of. Ryan calls me the king of the weird body things happening. But just strange things happen to me all the time. Yeah, I got bitten on the face. I was petting a dog outside of a friend's house, and you know, I was like 4 or 5 at the time, and so I'm just, you know, stroking his back, and the fact that he was growling quietly didn't really register to me, and then he just suddenly right all over the face. What was the first one? I was riding on the bike of my mother. A back of my mother was riding a bike, and I was on the back. This was at my aunt's house, and a little kid again, and my foot just swung back and forth, and eventually swung right in the middle of the moving spokes, and that was interesting.
Oh, the best one though, the grossest one is the cyst.
Yeah, that was.
What's that all about?
That was one of the most terrifying nights of my life, because I went to a doctor beforehand. It was a little weird looking cyst inside my belly button, and they had me get this is gross, but yeast medicine that women use. I don't know what that's called, but you know, like you put it in places for yeast.
Yes, like Vagisil.
Oh, that's what it's called. Yeah, and they had me rub that on my belly button, thinking it was like some kind of like yeast gross thing. I don't know. But it just kept getting bigger and bigger. So I went to the hospital, and they, I'm telling you, every employee, don't do this. If you are listening to this and you work at a hospital, every employee there came in to look at my belly button and go, oh, that's weird. Oh, that's strange. Like every single one of them was like, I don't know what's going on. So it turned out it was a cyst caused by an infection this is the strangest thing ever, from a piece of umbilical cord that has been trapped in my belly button since I was a baby.
Oh my God.
Insane. But here's the craziest part, is my mother, about a week later, had to go into surgery. She was like about to collapse. They took her to the hospital. She had to get something cut out of her stomach like a week, and I was like, it's the other part of my umbilical cord in her belly. I don't know. It's just very strange that like a week later, the exact same spot, she had some kind of surgery or something.
But it was totally unrelated though.
Yeah,
right?
Totally unrelated. But like, how weird. I don't know.
That was fact. Or something John just made up.
All right, so we're going to do fan questions now. Every time I interview a new guest, I put on my Facebook who I'm going to be interviewing. And I say, well, you know, if you join my Facebook, go ahead and write your questions here. So we had a bunch of questions for you.
Okay, cool.
Here we go. The first question, Annie Benanni. We all know Annie Benanni. She's an amazing balloon artist out of Southern California. And she's on almost every one of my podcasts. I haven't interviewed her yet.
She's mentioned it ever. Hi, Annie. All right, that's all.
She says, how do you find the books to incorporate into your library show? Are you inspired by a concept, the book, or an effect? And there's a PS, love this guy.
Oh. Hey, Annie, let's do Fuddruckers again sometime soon. That's our date night. So if you've never seen my library show, basically I do the Mark Daniel has a DVD out called Book Magic. There was the old Bob Hargreaves VHS. This was like 20 years ago. Tommy James has a reading DVD out. And I follow their basic idea, which is I introduce a popular children's book, and then I give it a little description, a little introduction to it, and then we do magic related to it. So that's my entire reading show, is introducing these books, and we bring them to life with magic.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and the librarians seem to love it. And as you know, there's a million magicians out there, and we already talked about concept. And your concept, oh, my God. You guys should see John at a showcase, because here's what he says. And like, doesn't this sell it in 2 seconds? He's like, you could book an animal show, you could book a magic show, or you could book me, and you got both with that one price. Like, that's boom, sold, you know, like, that's great. And so my thing is, there's a million magicians. Why are they going to pick me? So my entire show for the libraries is about the books. It's about reading, getting kids excited about books. Well, yeah, there you go. The answer, Annie, is yes. That's it. That's the answer. All of those. Now, the answer is no matter what theme I'm dealing with, whether it's a holiday show, Christmas, Halloween, or if, let's say, I'm putting together a dinosaur show for birthdays, or every year there's a new library theme, I will go through every single trick I own. I go through a list of every trick I own, which, by the way, if you're a magician, I think one of the most useful things you could do is take an afternoon, take a few hours, go through every box and bag and attics and basement, everything, and find every single trick you own and make a list of everything that you can do. You'll find it helps you so many ways throughout your magic career, and just keep adding to it as you get more tricks. But I go through that list, and let's say next year's theme for a lot of libraries, not really here in California, but a lot of libraries across the country, it's outer space. So I would just go through my list of tricks, and I would, anything that jumps out at me related to outer space. And I don't have the list in front of me now, but like, I know for a fact I have Man in the Moon, which is an old Supreme trick. The moon disappears from, so moon, boom, moon. Okay. I'm outer space theme. Boom. I write that on my list of possible tricks. I have a trick by Barry Mitchell called Slime Maker. It's a little sponge trick with green sponge balls. But, I did it in a Halloween show this past year. I called it an alien egg. And so alien egg, maybe I'll put that into my, so I just make a list of anything that jumps out at me. So that's the first step. Second step, you know, after that, you might have 10 possible tricks for your outer space theme show already. Maybe yes. You only have two, but that's two more than you had 5 minutes ago. And then next step is a theme breakdown. So now I list every possible thing I could think of with that theme. So like constellations, stars, moon, sun, planets, Saturn's rings, the moon landing, Neil Armstrong, rockets, astronauts' food, planting the American flag. So anything I could think of with that theme. And okay. So then if you're crazy, I don't do this, but if you're crazy, you could take every one of those items and go back through your list of tricks and see if anything connects with those. But what I do is after I make that list of the theme breakdown, I'll just go back through my list of tricks, and things will now jump out at me that didn't jump out at me before because of that list of tricks. So like Neil Armstrong planting the American flag on the moon. Well, okay, now I'm going to make the mismade flag. Maybe I'll put that on my list. And again, this doesn't mean any of these are necessarily going to be used. This is just, I'm making the list of everything that I have potentially. And then another thing I'll do is I call it the window shopping list. So I go on online dealers, all my favorite dealers, and I just go through all the tricks, kid show, general, any kind of magic. And I just, again, make a list of anything that jumps out. And I don't buy them yet. It doesn't mean that I'm going to buy them. It's giving me more inspiration. So those are the first steps. And then finally, with libraries, to get to Annie's question, along with the breakdown, the theme breakdown, the next step is you just go on Google and you type in children's books about. And sometimes children's books about outer space, but then I will also use some theme breakdown things. So children's books about astronauts, children's books about the moon, children's book. It's kind of a combination of all those things, Annie. I've got a list of books, I got a list of tricks, and a lot of times they will connect. So I'll be like, oh, look, Good Night Moon. I got the Man in the Moon trick, and ooh, those connect. I got an autobiography about the moon landing with the flag being planted in the moon, and I got the Disney. So I'll sort of connect them that way. And then the final thing, I will try to pick out books that are really popular kids' books, but also things that interest me. I found researching outer space books. There's a book called Aliens Love Underpants.
Oh.
And it's about aliens abducting underwear from clotheslines up into space. And I just think that's awesome. I love that. So I pick out books that I like. I pick out books that are popular. And then I also make it a point to pick out at least one book. And it's sadly hard. One book every library show, at least, that involves a young female main character. And they're hard to do. But, you know, I want the girls in the audience to feel included, too.
That's very smart. Great advice.
Well, good. Yeah. I mean, I think that should be. But anyway, so that's basically it. I make a bunch of lists and then things just start connecting. And once this connects with that, that's going to lead to more creativity and it just builds from there. So that's it. I make a bunch of lists and it usually helps answer the question for me.
That's a great step-by-step process. That's cool. Perfect.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, let's go on to Brett Bolich,
hey, Brett.
A terrific magician and loyal listener to the Variety Artist Podcast asks, what's the most tacos you've eaten in one sitting?
I'm sad that the answer is not like 30. Like I really wish it was. But I'm a huge fan of old El Paso taco nights. I just think that, and I'd say the most is 7.
Oh.
But that's pretty good, but 7.
That's okay.
But I'll tell you a little secret. I will make nachos every night for a week after, and I will eat nachos 24/7 once I've made an old El Paso taco night. I just love nachos; are also awesome. But yeah, okay, that's all. That's mine.
I have a nacho story.
Oh,
I have a friend. His name is Big Jim because he's big, and his name's Jim. And he has at least 5 kids that I'm thinking in my head, maybe 7. Anyway, he comes over to my house one time years ago and he says, John, can I borrow a trash bag? And I'm like, yeah. So I give him a nice clean trash bag. And so he takes, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 bags of nacho chips and dumps them into this trash bag. And then he takes a big bucket of beans and dumps them in the trash bag. And then he takes a bunch of cheese and dumps it in the trash bag. He shakes it all up. And he goes, kids, dinner.
Oh, God. I like him a lot. That's
all right. Pete Ellison, a musician from One World Rhythm and a computer genius. You can see him.
Awesome, yes.
Isn't he awesome?
Yeah.
And you can hear him on episode 2 of The Variety Artist and hear all about SEO and stuff. Here's his question. If you could have the ideal audience to work with, what would that look like age and group size wise? Also, 2 questions, I guess. How often do you have to adjust your material off the cuff due to an audience being younger or older than expected?
For adults, if I'm doing an adult comedy show, there's no answer. Literally anybody over 18, great.
Yep.
With kids, I'd say I'll talk about library since that's happening right now. My ideal age, and I kind of build my show around this age, is probably 4 years old to 8 years old. I'd say that's like the perfect daydream age.
Yeah.
And I think with libraries, that's a lot of what you're going to get. What I love about libraries, though, is that it's sort of like boot camp every summer because you don't know what you're going to get. So I do, my ideal age is 4 to 8. I forgot the rest of the question. It was, do I change it on the fly? Is that it?
Yeah.
Sometimes. One thing about my shows that I always do, the first trick I always do is something that I don't care if you're 4 or you're 90. If you're over 90, you know, go. I don't care. No. If you're 4 to 90, it doesn't matter. You're going to be impressed by that trick. And that, what's awesome about that is I can kind of walk into a show and feel comfortable knowing if it happens to be all 12-year-olds out of nowhere, I know that I can at least get off to a good start. So at least I get them on my side. I did a show recently this summer with the show started and there were 5 like 10 to 12-year-olds. Mm-hmm. And the first trick I do is like a $100 bill switch. So I take an airplane ticket, I fold it up, it turns into a $100 bill. To show how traveling costs money, and then I turn it into a library card to show them that you can travel everywhere for free with a library card. So that's great. Even if they're 10 to 12, that is impressive to them.
Right. It's shocking and amazing. And Robert Baxton and I talked about this too in a previous podcast about hit them hard at the very beginning.
Yeah.
you could have a really good magic that really fools everybody, like you say, from ages 4 to 90.
And it's not just for the audience, but it's for my sanity. Like, there is no show I can walk into and do that trick and not feel like comfortable. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to walk in feeling stressed. So I know the first trick's going to work. The second trick in my show is the Blooming Bouquet, an old feather duster looking piece of junk prop from India. It wouldn't fool anybody. So I could not do that as my second trick. So, I mean, flies spur of the moment. I just thought, well, you know what? My third trick is the appearance of my pet rat. My rat appears in the show. And I was like, you know what? Even if, I mean, a lot of those production boxes, older kids are still fooled by, but it doesn't matter because there's going to be a rat and they're going to like me because I have a rat.
That's right. That's my theory too.
So on the fly, I was like, okay, I'm going to move that next. And then I had another routine that I do that's fairly impressive. So I moved that next. And then I did a silk to egg later in the show. I moved that next. So basically I just crammed the beginning of that show with stuff that I knew the 10 to 12 year olds were going to like, because if I could get through like four routines and they liked me, I can then kind of move into the kiddier stuff, and they're going to go with it because they like me at this point, you know? Luckily, actually, with that show, a bunch of kids younger all of a sudden showed up like 20 minutes later, and I got to do all the kiddier stuff, and it worked out fine. But a lot of times it's really, and what's cool about it, about the libraries, again, the boot camp aspect of it, is a lot of it's just attitude. If you have the confidence and you're doing your show as though, I know you're going to like this, even if they're 12, they're going to go with it because you're having fun. You're bringing that con. The moment you like let down your guard and show that you're nervous that there are 12-year-olds there, they're going to eat you alive. It's just attitude.
Oh, yeah.
And I will change. My whole beginning of my show is raise your hand if you like magic. If you really like magic, raise both hands. If you really, really, really like magic, clap your hands together. So with 4-year-olds, I'll get down. Who likes magic? Raise your hand. You know? But then as we get into the 6 and 7, I think of myself more like SpongeBob SquarePants. So a little wilder, crazier. Who likes magic? Raise your hand! Like, it's a little more. Then as I get into the 10 to 12, it's more like, I think of myself like the older brother. Like, okay, who likes magic? Let me just ask. Who likes magic? Oh, we got some people who like magic. Awesome. So I'm just talking to them more normal. And then as we get into teenagers, I pretty much drop that altogether. And with teenagers, it's more about calling out reality. So like, I'm wearing my bright blue suit. I look like a kid's magician. I did a show for teenagers not too long ago, and I know what they were all thinking. Oh, gosh, they got us a kiddie magician. And so the first thing I did is I said, guys, I know what you're all thinking. This guy looks good. And then I said, and I just called out reality. I said, look at me. Clearly, I do magic for kids. No, I was at a kid's party earlier. But I also do magic for adults at comedy clubs, places like that. And I say that because comedy club, that sounds cool. That sounds, you know, that's adult, you know. And so I say, so, that's but, right. You know, you guys are sort of in between. I feel like I should do the adult stuff for you, right? You want the adult stuff? Okay. So basically calling out the reality, kind of saying what I know they're all already thinking. If I could do that for teenagers, then that gets them on my side. So it's all about, you could do the kind of the same general stuff for each group, but it's just about your attitude and how you approach it, how you present.
All right. So Doug Shear, an amazing school assembly entertainer. He is great, right?
Doug is amazing. Yes, he is.
He says, or he asks, have you ever had a brain scan?
I've had a belly button scan, but
it says, I'm serious because you are like the Rain Man of kid show magic. On a less serious note, do you think creativity is something people are simply born with, or is it something that can be learned?
Oof. Well, no, I've never had a brain scan, or that I know of. Maybe I have. Can it be learned? Is it born? I will say this, and this ties into the whole be more funny thing, the whole idea of comedy magic, and that is the reason I don't do linking rings for my adult comedy show, and I don't do the egg bag, and I don't do cups and balls, I don't do Miser's Dream, I could keep going. The reason I don't do those is I have yet to come up with any reason why I should put those on stage. I don't have my take. I don't have my point of view on them. I don't have a way in yet. It doesn't mean I won't someday, but I'm not going to put those on stage until I have a version of them, until I have a take on them that make them interesting, that make them unique, that make them different. that make them worthy of me, that make them worthy of my audiences, and frankly, worthy of magic as a whole. I think if you just take somebody else's routine and put it on stage, I think you're doing a disservice to magic because you're not making it yours. You're not making it you. And so I think a lot of creativity for me, it purely comes from just like pride. Purely comes from I'm not willing to settle. You know, I'm not going to do a routine unless it's worthy of me putting it on stage. And so I think it's that that forces you to be creative because, well, I got to do something on stage, so I better be creative and come up with something. But I think the way to be creative is A, don't settle. You have to come up with, you have to be willing to come up with new ideas. But B, and it's the same as joke writing, actually. My first joke I ever wrote, I was 18 years old. I was writing a skit for high school. And it involved, it was a mashup of Noah's Ark and it was, an elephant and, Romeo and Juliet. It was an elephant and a giraffe that wanted to be in love and they weren't allowed on Noah's Ark because you had to have two elephants in love and two giraffes in love. And then I set out to write this joke. I, for the first time in my life, I consciously, and I'm still proud of this, like 30 years later. No, 20, how old am I? It doesn't matter. The joke was, interspecies relationships are a huge faux pas. That means if you have faux paws, you don't marry an animal with two paws or faux hooves. That was my joke. I was like so proud of that. We did it for audiences. We actually traveled around the South doing it for different, and every time people laughed at it, it was just like this, like the feeling God creates when he creates. It was like, oh, passion. I loved it. I was so excited. And so from that moment on, I just kept writing jokes throughout my life. And I'll tell you, if I'm working on a routine right now and I want to write a joke for this moment in a routine, I could probably write a joke in about a minute. And it's not because I'm like great. It's because I've been doing it since I was 18. So if you want joke writing to be something you do, start now. And it's going to be hard. It's not going to be great. But 10 years from now, you're going to be amazing at it. Not only because the practice makes you better, but the most important part and the most proud thing I have about myself, the thing I'm proud about most with myself, is that I don't have a voice in my head that says you can't do something. I never say I can't do something. I just do it. And it might flop. It might not work. It might work. But I just do it. And if you start writing a joke now, and with every joke you write, that voice that says I can't do something is going to go away further and further and further. And that's the thing that's actually holding you back. And the same is true with creativity. If you want to be creative, start trying to be creative right now. Come up with an idea. Play with an idea. And I guarantee 10 years, I can't go a day without some idea popping into my head. The moment you start being creative, every day it's just going to get easier and easier. And then the final thing I'll say is the same with joke writing and the same with being creative. Sometimes if I'm writing a routine and I need a joke for this moment, I might have to write 20 jokes to get one that's decent. And the same with creativity. I'll come up with a million ideas, but there'll be one I'll put into a show. So that's the thing about creativity. Just keep doing it, make a million things to come up with one, and that voice in your head that says, I can't do that, that shouldn't exist. Just say, I'm gonna do it.
All right, next one. Regina Martinez, aka Silly Sparkles. Out of Texas, has posting videos of your work helped out your career?
I mean, specifically for the like magician side of my career, not necessarily the lay audience side of my career, although I think it all helps. But I mean, how long ago has it been? 8 years ago? 10 years ago? I just started putting out little free videos on YouTube for other kids magicians. Their routine ideas, Halloween ideas, Christmas ideas. Again, it's sort of like the Yay Taco thing. I'm not good at marketing. I'm not a good business. But I just put it out because I needed an outlet. I needed a creative outlet. I wanted to share ideas. I love sharing things. Those videos, people liked. And that allowed them to trust me that when I put out a book, they were interested in it and bought it. And that they all liked it, and then my DVD came out and they liked it. But it, I mean, none of it would have happened if I didn't have the trust from them already when I gave the free videos away. And I have my Facebook page. It's called Let's Talk About It. And I just give free videos, free ideas out on there because I just love, if I come up with something new, I get excited about it and I want to share ideas. So yeah, I mean, I think 100% it helped. And it just also helps. Like if you look up Christopher T. Magician, if you look up different comedy magician, kid show magician, a lot of those videos will pop up in Google searches, and that alone has helped too. So in a roundabout way, it kind of all helps. Yeah.
That may even help you without you even knowing
it. A lot of times, because I'll look up random things and that video will pop up. Cool thing, if you look up a lot of magicians' names and do an image search, you'll get a few images, but then you'll get a ton of other images. And if you look up Christopher T. Magician, at least recently, you get a page, the entire page is filled with pictures of me. And a lot of that comes from the videos.
Yes.
And then oddly, have you seen the video? They're the Naked Magicians. Have you seen that? The Naked Magicians?
I'm not sure.
They're magicians who perform naked. I think they're from like Australia or something. But for some reason,
no, I think I remember that. Yeah.
Well, a couple of their pictures pop up on my. I don't know what that says about me, but it's a bunch of pictures of me and then like two pictures of the naked magician. So I don't know.
I know when I was doing research on this interview, I typed in Christopher T. Magician. Of course, that's the first thing I do. And sure enough, a couple of your websites came up and then a bunch of your videos came up. I was just thinking most people have a website. So you type in Christopher T. Magician, you get his website, you look on the website, there's a couple of videos, blah, 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 blah. But in the way that you're doing it, when you type in Christopher T. Magician, and even before they get to your website, they're seeing videos of your performing, they're making that buying decision even before they're looking at your website.
Oh, you made me sound good. You made me sound smart. Yep, that's what I intended. That's perfect.
I'm sure that's exactly what you intended, right?
That's exactly. The one thing I'm really proud of, I hope this is still true. I haven't checked in a while. If you look up Taco Magician, I'm the top result.
Oh.
And that to me is good because when people leave my show, they're not going to remember Christopher T. Magician. But what was that Taco Magician? What was his name? And if they look up Taco Magician, I think I'm the first result. Hopefully still, I have been.
Right, they'll look up Yay Taco.
Yeah, oh, that hopefully. I've never checked that. Ooh, I'll get to check that.
All right, let's go to our next fan question. Addie Merritt, the magician known as Billy Bonkers. He asks, how did you establish yourself on the West Coast after moving to the area? How did you go about getting gigs and getting your name out there to library birthday show market that wasn't familiar with you?
I got lucky. moving here was like the stupidest decision but I'm a bad adult. I shouldn't have done it. We had a little money saved, not a lot, but what I would recommend to anybody, and Billy Bonkers is doing this, get to know everybody who lives there that is a magician. Mm-hmm. And I'm a shy person. I never would have done that in a million years. But I came here a few years ago. I lectured at CATS, which is a conference, a kid show conference that happens here. And there I met Brian Hoffman and Buster Balloon and Annie Banani. And I think I had Jeff Abbott that year. Like there were all the magicians that live around here. Richard Rebello is another. So all these magicians kind of knew me coming in. So it was sort of like, oh, look, this guy's here and let's help him out. Let's give him some more. And first of all, the magicians around here have been just so amazingly like supportive, which is great. You know, there was no competition. And I think that everybody should be like that. But if you're moving to a new area, I cannot recommend enough. I would have never known this until this situation, which is go out there and meet other magicians, buy them lunch and just be friends with them, because that's a lot of your support and work is going to come from those people. And now, luckily, I'm at a place where I can actually send people to other magicians, which is great. So that's it. And then, the libraries have been a huge... Oh, and the other thing I'll say is do not waste a single show. Every show I do, I personally, this is what I do, but I have wristbands, and every single kid goes home with a wristband that has my Yay Taco on it, and then it has my website. So a show doesn't happen. If they love me, they're going to go home. This wristband's going to end up at home with them, and my website is on. And hopefully that wristband ends up on like their nightstand or something like that.
Right.
Just don't waste a show. If you have a show, make sure everybody there knows. And my case, like Billy Bonkers is great because they'll probably remember Billy Bonkers. So little things like your name, you might hint that you're available for parties or whatever you're doing. But
I'm a firm believer of marketing during your show. It's the best time to market, and
it is the best way. It makes me feel so dirty, but it is. you should definitely do it. You have to do it.
Thank you, Christopher, for doing my podcast. Where can folks get a hold of you if they want to get a hold of you?
So you can always email me, Christopher T. Magician at gmail.com. You can always find me on Facebook at Christopher T. Magician, but I recommend you look up my normal old Facebook page. By all means, come be my friend, Christopher Barnes, B-A-R-N-E-S, like Barnes & Noble. If you're currently listening to this in the month of, 2018 in July, my current Facebook profile pic is a little Lego version of me, a little Lego statue. So that's how you'll find me. There's a lot of Christopher Barneses, so let's be honest. Finally, I have a Facebook group, and I, by all means, come join it. It is Christopher – oh, wait, no. It's called Let's Taco About It. Let's Taco About It. And I share all sorts of ideas, and sometimes with books and things, I'll do little specials and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Excellent. And they can they get a hold of you to get one or two or all three of your books?
Yes. So my middle book is through Amaze Kids, and it is available through all sorts of dealers. It's called Just for Fun. But Amaze Kids carries it. I recommend going there because they make it directly, so you just get it direct from them. That one I don't always have copies of. But the other two I do through CreateSpace. So that's the ones. Be More Funny is the brand new one. Beyond Look, Don't See is my first book for Kids Show Magic. For those of you who don't know, Be More Funny is comedy magic for adult audiences and family audiences, but specifically making adults laugh.
Yeah, it's terrific.
Thank you very much. It's
a triumph in comedy magic. It's wonderful.
Oh, thank you. I know we're supposed to be stopping, but I'll just tell you. Even if you cut this out, I'll tell you I'm passionate about it. I see kid show magic improving leaps and rounds. Bounds the art of kid show magic, because when you think about it, every book that comes out for kids magicians isn't just tricks and routines. Along with it, there's theory on how to entertain with that magic. But if you look at adult magic, 99 point every book ever for adult magic, close-up, general, all that magic, it's just tricks. Few and far between. There's Maximum Entertainment. There's a book called Stand Up that came out years ago. The scripting books by Pete McCabe. Daryl Fitzke, the showmanship for magicians. There's maybe 10 total. I can name five right now. books out there for general magicians on how to actually entertain with that magic. You could get all the tricks and routines in the world, but how do you actually entertain with the magic? And so I'm hoping this book starts a wave of information coming out, hopefully, of different people's points of views on how to entertain adults with magic. Hopefully, we'll see. I hope it pushes things forward. That's the goal.
I think it will.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Christopher. You are so great. To get any of Christopher's books or any book recommended by any guest on any of the Variety Artist podcasts, go to thevarietyartist.com/books and tell a friend that might find this valuable. That's how we can spread the word. Feel free to reach me at john@thevarietyartist.com, or you can message me on Facebook, of course. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist, but your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.